Good afternoon. Good to see you. I must admit, when I was driving down here, I was going to say, well, I was going to go up or down, from Balham down. Thank you. That's a good start. At this stage of life, we know which direction we're in. And I thought, I'm 54 on Monday. I'm thinking, I'm not quite at retirement. What am I doing trying to share with a group of people who are in that stage of life? But to be honest with you, at LICC, this material and our thinking around this particular season of life has recently developed. So genuinely be interested as I share with you some of this material today, what, you know, how it comes across to you, how you find it, whether it's helpful or not. So hopefully it will be. It's that front seat, folks. There you go. You're welcome. So unusual in a Baptist church at home to see anybody sat in the front row. It's great. Good to have you. Good to have you with us. As James said, I work with LICC. I've worked in the construction industry. I'm married to the wonderful Lisa. We've got two children. Brianna, our daughter, who during lockdown has moved. She's gone over to the dark side. She's joined the Anglican church during... Had to get people on side as you start. But Brianna's joined a Holy Trinity plant in Cardiff during lockdown as their what they call their creative pastor. And she's loving it. And then we have a son called Jackson. Jack's 21 and he's developing a music career as a singer. And it's been a tough time over this last couple of years, but that's what he's doing. And they're brilliant at what they do. So as we think about retirement, I just thought I might begin with something. I know it's just after lunch. I found this little clip of some children talking about their understanding of what retirement or what retired means. So hopefully this will work and it will be loud enough. I'll adjust volumes if not, but hopefully it will be loud enough for us to be able to hear this.
What does retirement mean?
Retirement is where you reach a certain age where it's more difficult for you to work.
I think it's like when you're in work and you're a long time and you feel like you want to get out.
You get free money from your past work experience and you just get to do whatever you want.
Yeah, it seems fun because you get to go on vacation a lot.
You get to go places like France and maybe Paris.
Whereas I'm kind of doing chores around the house or like taking vacation to get far as away as you want from the kids.
All the people that, you know, you maybe went to work and said, huh? I gotta deal with them again.
Retirement is when you think I've done my part and you say to your job manager, goodbye, so long, try to find someone else that's better than me.
I think it is that you're so exhausted. You're really, really exhausted and you're just really tired.
When I retire, I'm going to be 26.
I'm going home thinking of PJs and probably never get out of your PJs.
Whenever you say I'm too old for this, and then you sit at home and yell at the computer screen.
Retirement is when you just don't understand why they don't make the buttons on the remote bigger, you don't understand why all these young whippersnappers drive so fast, and your back hurts every time you bend over to feed your dog, and, you know, you started getting interested in getting more and more cats, and you're just, dang, I'm really sick of all these people at work, and you just want to go travel the world and be by yourself and buy all these clothes for your grandchildren and, you know, just have more fun with your life. You don't have to worry about all the ignorance that you used to work with. Go travel the world.
Like get some rest and want to go home.
Like if you want to do what you want to do and you don't want to do work and you want to go like somewhere, it's really fun and that's what I really like.
Mostly, you just lay in bed all day and watch TV.
It's when you get too old for your job and you go to a retirement home.
Probably over the age of 60,
maybe even 50.
I've never actually seen a retirement home.
It's like a new life again. Like, you're not a pickle anymore, you're a cucumber.
I have no idea.
not the last. I have no idea. You just so you're exhausted. You spend all day in your pajamas, and hopefully we might retire by the time we're 26. I love the sound of that. It's interesting, just when you type into Google a search just on that word retired or retirement, the sort of images that come up, the kind of thing that people think it might be like. It's interesting, just looking up what some people have said about retirement. Chichi Rodriguez, professional golfer, said when a man retires, his wife gets twice the man and half the income. Interesting. Jessica Innes Hill, she said this, as she more about retiring from athletics. She said, the closer I get to retirement, the more I feel it will be a huge change, a shock, because athletics has been the core of my whole life. I know I'll miss the feeling of running fast, the adrenaline rush, and hearing the crowd cheer me on. It kind of represents that transition when perhaps our work in some ways has defined us, whatever that has been, or the raising of children, whatever it might be, that leaving those things behind has been tough. Dwight Moody, D.L. Moody, he said this. He said preparation, he doesn't use the word retirement, but he says preparation for old age should begin not later than one's teens. A life which is empty of purpose until 65 will not suddenly become filled on retirement. My dad will be 80 next year, and one of the things that grieves me is my dad never had a vision for his working life. He's been a Christian most of his life, but he never had a vision for his work life, for the entirety of it. He commuted from where he and my mum live in Frinton-on-Sea up in Essex into London every day, but his church never gave him a vision for that. And as he's entered into retirement, he's got excited about what he can do at the church. And it seems to be a little bit one-dimensional in church life. Sometimes it's about what now I can go on the road. It's now, because I felt years feeling guilty of what I couldn't do, but now I can do those things. And I've been trying to get with my dad and say, but Dad, there's other things, you know, maybe God wants you to do other things at this stage of your life. And he's coming alive to this whole concept of his front line and where it is and what's going on there. And he volunteers to drive people to the hospital. And we've been talking about how he's making that his front line. But I think it's so easy for us to kind of not understand or not have a very clear understanding of what that retirement thing is. The word retirement's okay, but maybe it's not the best. Because it's interesting, even as people came in the room today, you said things, some of you, that kind of, maybe in a jest kind of way, but tell us what we kind of think of this stage of our lives. Like it's the downward trajectory. Some, you know, kind of we're this is the has-been type group or whatever. It's that kind of a thing. It's like it's a laying down of something, perhaps signaling the beginning of a downward slope. That we've served our usefulness, and now it's time to eke out whatever pleasure we can out of the things that we enjoy to do and leave the other stuff to the younger ones. You hear it in church life all the time, as older people will say to me, but now it's time to leave it to the younger ones. It's that kind of language. But surely it can't be that. And I think it's a stage of life that's better to think in terms of repurposing rather than retiring. So what I want us to think about, and it's in the notes there, but it's just to begin to get you thinking about these things, and I'll genuinely give you a kind of a repurpose pause at each moment for you to think, well, what is God saying to me today about this? I have flipped these around just because I had to send the notes to Wendy quite early, and as I looked at it, I thought, actually, I think I'm going to finish with purpose rather than it be in the middle. So we're going to look at identity. And these are, we've discovered from talking to people who are in this season of life, these seem to be the three big ones when you're making this transition. Who am I now that I'm retired? Now that I'm retired, if you understand this language, where am I? What's my context? We at LICC use this language of our front line. Where do I spend time with people that are not yet Christians? And my purpose, what do I do in this season of life? I say it's more about a repurposing at this stage. I won't use both the texts that I sent through and you have in your notes, but we'll just focus in on this one from Psalm 92, maybe very familiar to us. It says, the righteous will flourish like a palm tree. They will grow like a cedar of Lebanon, planted in the house of the Lord. They will flourish in the courts of our God. They will still bear fruit in old age. They will stay fresh and green, proclaiming, "The Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no wickedness in him." It's interesting, isn't it? It's a lovely psalm. But it's interesting when you look at what that age or stage of our life is compared to, when you look at the trees that it talks about. Palm trees and cedar trees, specifically cedar trees or Lebanon cedar trees. Palm trees are very, not all varieties, but many are very tall. They provide shade. They're a symbol in Assyrian culture. They're a symbol of life. Cedar trees are grand trees when they're full grown. The Lebanon cedar tree grows to 130 feet tall. It has apparently a grayish brown bark. So some similarities with how we get in, well, if I had hair, it might be grey at this stage of my life. It's interesting that these trees in this psalm symbolise solidness, maturity, beauty and growth. Interesting, isn't it, that in a psalm it already begins to challenge what our culture sometimes says about what it means to be at this stage of life. That actually in retirement or in that season of our lives, we can be at our very best in terms of fruitfulness towards those around us, whether it's family, friends, neighbours, the things we get involved in, volunteering, the groups, you know, wherever we spend our leisure time and so on. Just begins to challenge that culture within us. Challenges the assumptions around retirement. Three key assumptions that I would make as we think about retirement this afternoon are these. That whatever stage or age of life we're at, God always has good plans for us. Plans to be with us. Plans to bless us. Plans to grow us. Plans to work through us for the good of others and for the furthering of his kingdom. Within this assumption, let's assume that our later years, therefore, are significant years. And today, it would be obvious to say that with a generally expected, you know, longer lifespan, that stage of life now, if you're retiring around 65, is a lot longer than it once was. It's a whole other stage of life and season to manage, isn't it, in terms of what's going on there. And certainly nowadays, people who are in their 60s and 70s would certainly not consider themselves to be elderly. My mum, who's she's 78. She took up playing golf a couple of years ago. She's very good at it. But she, you know, you don't just because you're in that stage. She certainly would not consider herself to be an elderly person. Think about so many of the significant characters of Scripture. Many of them were older. Some of them did some really significant things, yes, in their younger years, but continue to bear fruit in old age. Think about people like Daniel or John, while others in the Bible only get introduced to us at the point at which they're in their twilight years. And God does significant things through them, often because, I think like the psalm said, it's the stage of life in which hopefully by that stage in my walk with God, I'm mature to a point where I've got so much more to offer at this stage. Another assumption, that retirement will look different for different people. Our experience of retirement will be shaped by a whole range of different factors. Our physical health, whether it's good or not, our mental health, our finances, our family situation, our relationships, our commitments, our housing, our personality, our interests, the kind of work that we used to do, the skills and abilities that we've gained over the years, the kind of church that we belong to, and so on. We're all different. And whatever our situation is, again, that God has good plans and purposes for us. And we might need to be the ones that challenge our church communities on this, because I think even within church culture, particularly those of us that have served churches as ministers, we sometimes simply see the retired group as a kind of volunteer workforce. And yet the skills that you may have gained in working life, a good friend of mine, he recently retired from financial services, but over the years of his work in financial services, he gained tremendous skills in mentoring those who are coming up through the ranks. What he chose to do was to go and serve his local community by becoming a mentor within Liverpool Football Club. It's, as a keen Christian, yes, he does get involved in his gathered church community, but there are other opportunities there as well. Retirement will look different for different people. And obviously saying, we picked this up from what Mark has been saying this morning, that in terms of retirement, that the whole of life matters. You know, LICC talks about this, you'll have heard Mark talk about it this morning, about whole life discipleship. And he used the definition of discipleship. He said that a disciple is somebody who is learning to live the way of Jesus in this moment, and in their context. If you listen to that, the disciple is somebody who's learning to live the way of Jesus in this moment and in your particular context. And that will be different for everybody here. The moment is always changing. What it was to follow the way of Jesus when I was a teenager, in some senses, is different from when I went into the world of construction work. It's different from when I entered into family life with Lisa and the children. It's different from when I might retire. It's always changing. That we're always asking, what does it look like to follow Jesus now? It's whole life discipleship. And in this moment, and our moments are always changing, aren't they? The things that may be before you at this season of your life may be very different. You may not have expected to think, oh my goodness, we thought the children left, but we're offering more care for our grandchildren than we thought we would be. Or we're not as healthy in this stage of life as I thought I would be. Some good friends, I think in our own church, of a couple called Olive and John, who ran their own business throughout their lives, a grocery business. And when they retired, Olive said, I'm so looking forward to getting some time with John. But his transition into retirement, stopping running his own business, he went into this kind of shell-like state and he never came out of it. And Olive ended up looking after him, I think, for about 15 years before he finally passed away. And she said, and she's just such a dedicated Christian lady, but she said she would stand at her home, and I can picture it having been in it, and she'd look out the window and she said, I feel so bad because I see couples walking past, elderly couples walking past hand in hand. And she said, I'd feel jealous, Steve. Or she'd call me Pastor. I feel jealous, Pastor. I feel bad for feeling jealous. And I'd think, Olive, I completely understand why you would feel that way. The whole of life matters, but it will look different, won't it, for different people. And in terms of the whole of life mattering, you know, that we... That God cares about all of it. I share this definition with you already, but there it is on the screen. A disciple is somebody who's learning to live the way of Jesus in their context at this moment. So let's just right now, and I thought we'd plan it in this way, so just to pause for a moment. You can chat to the person next to you if you want to, but just have a repurposed pause. If this is going to be kind of a seminar where it's not just, we've heard a lot of stuff today already, but let's take a moment just to think, okay, what does this mean for me today? When I think about retirement, when you think about retirement, do you see yourself, if this is a helpful way of thinking, do you see yourself as a cedar of Lebanon? Or do you see yourself, I was trying to think of a comparison, this probably doesn't work. There'll be some tree expert in the room who says, this really doesn't work. So anyway, I just put weeping willow. I don't know if weeping willow works. I was just trying to think of a tree that's, I like weeping willows. There's nothing against weeping willows. I'm just saying, but how do you see yourself? Like, just, I wasn't getting at the people who walked in and said, has your thinking about retirement been shaped more by the culture around you? And what you think the expectation, you know, have I come into retirement thinking this is about vacation, this is about improving my golf swing, it's about going down the allotment, you know, what's it shaped by? Nothing wrong with any of those things, but what's shaping it? And one other question, yeah, have you come to retirement thinking more vacation rather than vocation? I'll give you just 30 seconds of a pause, just to jot something down or to just notice something in your thinking. You might not be a... But if you want to make a note, just think, yeah, where am I at as we just start this afternoon? Have a think about that. and then we'll look at identity. Okay, let's draw our come back together. And I think I'll try and give you a little bit more space to talk and think about it, but it's just to give you those pause moments where you go, hang on, let me just not listen, but let me note something down. Let's explore a bit about our identity. It's a key one actually in all the transition moments of life, whether you're transitioning from your adolescence into the early years of work, whether that into if you go into family life or whatever it might be, and certainly from our working lives into retirement. But let's think about identity. I'm sure you've noticed when I think about identity, how often when people ask you a question about who you are, they'll ask a question about what we do. And we tell them who we are. So we meet someone at a wedding or in a local park and they ask us, what do you do? We don't usually say, I do nursing, or I pastor a church. We often give them an I am answer. I am a nurse. I am a pastor. I am in banking. I am a builder, or whatever it might be. I'm a parent. I'm a civil engineer. They ask us a question about our function and we instinctively tell them something about our identity. They ask what, but we tell them who. Then one day we find ourselves retired and we get asked, what do you do? We pause for a moment. What do we say now? How do we finish the sentence? Back when we were 21 years old, we probably explored identity with a fair amount of energy and vigor. What am I going to give my life to? We may have thought, who am I now and who might I become? When we enter into our later years and we hang up our proverbial boots, as it were, many of us find the identity questions resurfacing. For some, this is exciting. It's a season of opportunity, possibilities and exploration. For others, it can be daunting and disorientating and even depressing. So many people often get their identity from what they do. So when they lose that role and it's gone, their identity goes with it. Meet Charles. In his book, This Is Our Time, author Trevon Wax tells the story of Charles M. Schulz. You'll know Charles M. Schulz, partly by the indication of what he wrote, the Peanuts cartoon. I was going to just tell you Charles' story, but I thought, surely he wrote something about retirement, a little cartoon. I found that. I don't want to. I don't have to. You can't make me. I'm retired. You might want to get it and hang it up somewhere. Anyway, Charles Schulz. Every day for 50 years, a new cartoon strip appeared. Each dreamt up and sketched out by Charles Schulz. Tragically, though, cancer brought him face to face with retirement sooner than he was ready for. Wax explains how Schulz vacillated between feelings of anger and despair. In an interview near the end of his life, Schulz lamented having to lay down his iconic cartoon series before he was ready. He said this, I never dreamt this is what would happen to me. All of a sudden, it's gone. It's been taken away from me. I did not take this away from me. It was taken away from me. A close friend of the cartoonist shared how Schulz was not able to lay down his work graciously. Reflecting on Schulz's life, his biographer, David McKellis, made this observation. To the very end, his life had been inseparable from his art. In the moment of ceasing to be a cartoonist, he ceased to be. We often struggle with identity issues at the transition moments of our lives. To at least some extent, people's identities have always been linked in some way to what they do. Many British surnames are based on the kind of work that people did in terms of earlier generations. Think cook or smith or weaver, whatever it might be. Even in the Bible, people are often referred to by the work they did. Luke the doctor, Lydia the purple cloth trader, King David, Anna the prophetess. At least to some extent, it's inevitable that our identity gets linked to what we do. But for the people of God, if we're going to live out our changing roles and identities well, whether that's as a grandparent, a board member, a carer, a volunteer, or whatever, it will help us enormously in that transition if we're secure in our ultimate identity. It's interesting that in both the Old and New Testaments, this comes across. Think about what it says in the book of Exodus. As God is beginning to give identity to this group of people, it says, on the first day of the third month after the Israelites left Egypt, on that very day they came to the desert of Sinai. After they set out from Rephidim, they entered the desert of Sinai, and Israel camped there in the desert in front of the mountain. Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, "This is what you are to say to the descendants of Jacob and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you out to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations, you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites. Powerful, aren't they, in terms of identity? Treasure possession, chosen by and loved by God. A kingdom of priests. Goes on, it says, "So Moses went back and summoned the elders of the people and set before them all the words the Lord had commanded him to speak. The people all responded together, 'We will do everything the Lord has said.' So Moses brought their answer back to the Lord." New Testament, 1 Peter 2, 9 and 10. "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy." It seems to me, no matter what stage of life we're at, if we're not careful, I was saying to somebody over lunch that when I went into the construction industry, I left school when I was 16, went into the building trade culture shaped me more than my Christian church culture. It just because I think it just happens, and I think it seems to me that no matter what stage of life we're at, the culture around us can shape us more and tell us who we are, identity-wise, than we allow what God says about us to shape who we think we are. Special possessions, a kingdom of priests. I don't know what your churchmanship is, but I believe in the truth that there's a sense in which we're all priests. We all represent the divine to those around us. So whether as volunteer or grandparent or when you're at the golf club, whatever it might be, don't compartmentalize your life. You're a priest, representer. When you feel like bending that seven iron around the tree, you're a priest representing the divine to those around you. So a repurposed moment. Let's take a pause. Maybe you can chat if you want, but just to ask yourself these questions. As a repurposed pause in this season of your life, having heard that, how would you describe your God-given identity in your own words? Sometimes it needs us to do that. We can hear it, but sometimes to actually verbalize it, and maybe you prefer to do it that way with each other, or write it down, is a helpful thing to do. And the second question is, to what extent are you confident in your God-given identity at this point in your life? That's one more to reflect on but to what extent would you say you're confident in your God-given identity? Again, I give you one minute just to kind of take that repurpose pause. Just 10 seconds left, just 10 seconds to wind up that conversation. Okay, let's come back together. If it's helpful, I've got something I can hand out to you at the end if you want to take that away and think on it further. Thinking about context, we use this word frontline. Don't worry too much if you don't trip over it. It's not a word that, I mean, we're precious about it, but you don't have to be precious about it. It's just finding a word that talks about that context where you engage with people in your everyday life that perhaps are not yet Christians. So I was sharing actually with James that for me, one of the adjustments I made as a minister was I'd got so wrapped up in the gathered life of the church that I had no kind of healthy outlet in terms of doing things outside of that. And I always enjoyed playing sports. So some years ago, about 12 years ago, I was sharing how I stopped a lunchtime service that our church had on a Thursday so that I could go back to playing squash. Because of lockdown, I now have recovered playing squash with three London black cab drivers, they happen to be, all of them, on a Tuesday and a Thursday, lunchtime. Engaging with them about life's been incredible. Getting to talk to them about what they see as the purpose of life, praying with them about the fact that Colin, 2 years ago, got prostate cancer, Peter, his mother, passed away last year, and they, at the back of the court, just after a match, will want to talk about it or, you know, ask you to pray about it or whatever it is. And I felt that was really important to re-engage with that context. We talked about, our context might be the neighbourhood we live in, those that are living around us. And sometimes church life, gathered church life, can make us so busy. Like I grew up in a church community at Frinton where we had about 550 members and a hugely busy programme. And there was constant talk about engaging with people about our faith, but no time to do it. I was with my church morning, afternoon, evening on a Sunday, prayer meetings, running the youth club, in a life group, and all the stuff. I was like, when am I supposed to build a relationship with anybody outside of this? I think we have to slim down what we do as church. Anyway, that's a whole other subject. I can come and talk about that another time. When I think about frontline, it's a great word, I think, because it contains a whole sentence within itself. A frontline is that regular activity or place where we come to people that into contact with people that aren't Christians. Generally speaking, much of the UK church is really good at connecting with certain segments of the population through organised activities that we run from our buildings or from the centre of who we are as church. Perhaps we connect with parents and carers through toddler groups, with people who are lonely through lunch clubs, or people who are struggling to make ends meet through things like debt advice centres and things like that. And often in churches, we proudly talk about those things, the badges of who we are as church. But there's a whole bunch of other people out there. And who is it that's coming into contact with them? They may be the people that are behind the reception desk at a local doctor's surgery or at the swimming pool or the gym or the bowls club, or they're walking the dogs by the river or out in the field or on the beach, or they're part of the book club that we belong to. How's the church going to come into contact with them if we talk about church in relation to that gathered stuff we do and not in relation to all that other stuff? So meet Carol, firstly. This is Carol, James and Vivian. Carol is in her early 70s. She lives in a city in the southeast. And when the coronavirus pandemic hit, her regular supermarket set aside certain hours where only those more at risk could shop. So one Tuesday morning, there she was queuing, nervously. Quite quickly, she noticed something strange was happening. People were actually talking to each other. It wasn't long before she was involved in a conversation, and it wasn't much longer before some people were sharing quite personal things about their fears and their sense of loss. The next Tuesday morning, Carol prayed on her way to the supermarket, which wasn't something she normally did. But now she recognized this was her front line. Many of the same people were in the queue. And because she listened with such care, some people even began waiting for her outside the supermarket so they could continue the conversation in private after they finished their shopping. Carol was able to offer godly advice, to show compassion, the compassion of Christ, and to let people know she was praying for them. It's not her real name, actually. Carol was part of a learning hub that I ran for the last couple of years. James, in his late 70s, when he moved into a new town, he'd been praying, "Father, at this stage of my life, how might I best use my time and my skills to serve others?" The answer came as he was strolling through the town when he noticed a sign in the library window. "Wanted, volunteer computer buddy, apply within." Thought James, "that's interesting." During his working life, James had developed a real interest in computers, and he thought maybe he could put what he'd learned to good use during his time in that role. And so he applied for the role within the library, got the job, and not only found himself helping people understand how to use a computer, but surprise, surprise, talking to people about their friendships and family and all that was going on there. And Vivian, in her 80s. Due to a number of chronic health conditions, she doesn't leave the house much. She has carers in 3 times a day. Some of the carers who come into her home are absolutely lovely. Others treat Vivian more like a name on a list to be ticked. They are under a lot of pressure, she says. She understands that. It must be very difficult for them, and they don't get paid a lot. Before each carer arrives, Vivian prays for them. Then while they are in her home, she asks them questions about their lives, about how they're doing. She's sympathetic and encouraging. And for some of her carers, Vivian is the only person they really open up to. And when they're gone, she prays for them again. I remember saying to my dad, as my dad began to develop that front line of taking people to the hospital, and he'd say to me, "Steve, this is my front line." I said to him one day, "Dad, do you ever pray for those that you pick up?" "Oh," he said, "I hadn't thought about doing that." I thought, it's funny. Christian always, he hadn't thought about that simple perspective change, that simple adjustment to what he was doing. I've met so many folk who are in that elderly stage of life whose beds are kind of like altars that you kneel at. And you think you're going to visit them. And somehow they minister to you. Let's take a repurposed pause on this one. When you think about your context now, your front line, what are the places and activities that bring you into contact with people who aren't Christians? You may have not have developed it yet. You may find yourself in a new context or with perhaps space you didn't have before in your working life, and you suddenly like, I'm starting to actually notice our neighbours. Maybe retirement has involved not just a transition from work, but a transition to a new place. And you think, I'm in this particular place. What's going on within a, depends on your setting as to how, you know, I live in London, so a lot goes on within a quarter mile radius of my home. But what goes on within the mile around where you live? And why has God put you there? Or you may have joined, finally you've got that time to belong to the gym or join that, you know, that for that hobby thing that you've always wanted to develop more so. Who's there? Is it just a hobby, or like so many of these stories, are there conversations to be had there? Let me give you just a minute with that. And also just that other question, you know, since retiring, what new front lines have you gained and how have existing front lines changed? Let me just give you a minute to make some notes or thoughts or share about that. I was just prompted in that particular pause to say this, and I think this again is true at any season of our life. I think for me, part of my fear when I went initially into the building trade about sharing my faith with others was I thought that the only fruit that you had to bear out on your front line was to be a messenger of the gospel. My experience for a lot of people, particularly in our culture, is they'd rather go to the dentist than talk about their faith with others. You know, and it does take a long time. And I think a lot of people, I've met friends of mine who've been in their work life for years and have never told anybody about their faith because they just never had the confidence to do it. And I think that culture has really shaped us, because I think there can be a mentality we think, oh man, are you saying that every area of my life I've got to kind of, like, I want this one space, whatever it might be, where I belong to this God, and I haven't got to, it's so funny, like, I feel the pressure of, have I got to be a witness here or whatever? It can feel, there's a lot of nodding going on in the room, which is, but I get that. But I think if you, and maybe this is where to revisit the kind of fruitfulness stuff, because I think the framework it gives is so helpful. It's so life-giving in the sense of saying, but my character is still important. If I've got opportunities to mould the culture of how this, you know, street operates, the club work, you know, you understand the picture. It gives us a much more holistic way of seeing what we're involved in. We may, but it seems to me it doesn't often happen, but we may have opportunities to share verbally with others and talk about why we believe what we believe. But the other things are particularly a part of that frontline context as well, aren't they? Worth it re-exploring. I thought we'd come to this one last in our seminar this afternoon, the thing of purpose. Now that I'm retired, what do I do? What do I do? People transitioning into this season of life are, I think, like we always are as we transition in seasons, to know, what does God want me to do in this particular season? It's probably not a word that we hear every day, but when we hear the word vocation, I wonder what it makes us think of. I wonder who you think it applies to. It's a word, in my experience, that tends to get applied to people who go into something vocational, like a minister might, or it may be that some people see going into medicine or into teaching as a vocation. But for those of us who are outside those kind of spheres, it's possible that we've never considered the possibility that it might apply to all of us. The word vocation comes from the Latin word vocare, which means to call. So the word vocation is about calling, which presumes there's a caller, someone who calls us to or to be something or someone. The one who is calling is none other than God himself. God is calling us. You see, God doesn't just call a small percentage of people to a few narrowly defined roles. He calls us into a myriad of different ways in which we'll express who he is through what we do in our activity. In our society, retirement is normally associated with this other V word, vacation. The children said it, didn't they? You can go on holiday a lot. Oh, if only we had the means to do that. What did she say? To France or Paris or somewhere like that, she said. That might be nice, and we might get the opportunity to do those things. But it's often associated with vacation. It's merely a time in retirement to do what they want to do, what we want to do, to finally enjoy after many years of hard toil what we want to do. Nothing wrong with that. While we might have some great vacations if health and finances allow, ultimately, our retirement years are a season where we can continue to respond to and live out our God-given vocation, as well as enjoy vacation. Again, who is shaping the season or that season of our life? Billy Graham said this. He said, old age has its challenges and is not for wimps. But God wants us to embrace it as part of his plan for our lives and to look for the Lord's purpose in every circumstance and in every face or voice we encounter daily. Powerful, isn't it? We are all called. Mark touched on this a bit this morning, but just to put it up before us again, this is one of those pennies that takes a while to drop, because so much of our lives, I think church culture has not taught us to think that we're all called. We make a huge fuss of the call. When I shifted from building work, from being a bricklayer into being a minister, my church made a huge fuss of me. They didn't make much of a fuss of me when I was a bricklayer. They never prayed for me when I was a bricklayer. Not once. But boy, when I became a minister, They prayed for me. Some people supported me financially. They were interested in what I was doing. And I kind of looked back on that and thought, you know, we're all called. Oh, there's somebody at my front door at home. That's what that was off going off in my... I thought, what was that? It's the front door at home. I've got one of those silly ring things. Yeah, do you mind if I answer it? No, hopefully Lisa will sort that out. Mark touched on this. We're all called to steward the earth. We're all called to cultivate and care for the world that we live in. We're all called to do that. And I think our eyes in the season we're in as a nation, our eyes are opening to that more and more and more. But we're called to do something with the raw material that God has given us. We're all called to do it. I remember hearing Bishop T.D. Jakes, the great black preacher, he said, God has only ever made a tree. He said, God never made a table. Oh, I quite like that. It's kind of giving you the raw material. He said, you know, like God, it sounds funny that God only ever made a tree, but you look at what carpenters do with that. God gives us the raw material and then we do something with it. We're all called to be disciples of Jesus, to follow him in those different seasons of our lives. We are all called to belong to his community, his new community, the church. And we are all called to participate in God's mission. We're all called to do those things. Mark showed one of these earlier. I thought I'd show this one. It's appropriate for this. We've just literally are launching over the month of November a series of fruitfulness videos of people, real people in their real contexts. And this one that I'm going to show you is the story of a guy called Sunil. Sunil has recently retired, and it just reflects on what fruitfulness now looks like in his retired season of his life. So we'll just enjoy watching this.
Hired a year ago after a career as a psychiatrist. So what do the six M's of fruitfulness look like for him? Sunil was praying that in his so-called retirement, God would work through all his training and life experience in new ways. But how? God said, focus on friendships and life coaching. Of course, there were lots of things other people wanted him to do. So modeling godly character required a lot of self-control and gentleness to stay on track. For him, making good work is about nurturing relationships with friends and family, making time to play badminton with his son, and getting beaten ever more comprehensively as the weeks go by. It means preparing really, really well for every client. Sunil ministers grace and love by working hard to help clients discover their real underlying issues. Molding culture means not running a big client base, as most coaches will, but setting boundaries, just three people at a time, even as he seeks to offer his wisdom to a broader audience through writing and podcasts. Being a mouthpiece for truth and justice means that when a client does ask for his opinion, he'll give the biblical answer even if he doesn't quote the verse. As a messenger of the gospel, he makes it clear to clients that if they have no interest in God, then he's probably not the coach for them. Because when you're offering life coaching, questions of meaning and purpose are bound to bubble up. And they do. What does living the six M's of fruitfulness look like for you?
It's a powerful framework, isn't it? When you think about continuing in fruitfulness in this stage of life, it's such a powerful, powerful time of our lives. I won't go through those now. Just to leave you with this, and again, to take this one away to think about, I found this quite helpful, actually. I think when you're thinking about fruitfulness and thinking about this stage of life, another thing that would be interesting to note is to use this framework. It comes from a lady called Amy Sherman who's written on this, and she talked about considering your abilities, what are you good at, your affections, what do you care about, your aches, not literally as you get older, kind of, you know, that I can't bend out, whatever. What do you encounter in the brokenness of the world? And anchors, what are the realistic circumstances of your life? So it's quite a helpful little framework. Yeah, take a picture of it, or I can always send you these slides if they're helpful. But I think it's quite a helpful framework to think about your retirement years. I tried to do this, and I didn't make enough copies of this for everyone to take away, which is probably a bit sad. I think I've got 20 of these. But I wondered if you felt, you know, you might just be that there was enough there for me to take away with and think about this. But I developed last year a personal discipleship plan, and what I've done is adjusted it slightly, and it's called my retirement plan. And what it has within it is just slightly more information about where you can actually begin to kind of take it away and spend time with it, where you map your front line, where you think about your identity now, you clarify your sense of calling and so on. And at the end there, you kind of say, okay, at this stage of my life, here is my retirement plan. This is kind of how I see God might use me fruitfully at this stage of my life. If you're interested to take one of those away, I'll leave them on a chair here next to the door, and you can take one. If they do all happen to go, which I'm not anticipating necessary, but just give me a note of an email address and I'll send one on to you. But let me pray for you just before we go back and join the others. Yeah, Father, there's a sense in which, just because of our program today, we've got to rush back next door. But just pray for each and every person here. Pray for them in the season of life they find themselves in now. And I just pray that, yeah, they would definitely continue to be fruitful in this season. I pray that today, the truths that perhaps have resonated about who they are, about the context and the significance of it, where you've placed them, no matter where that is, and their purpose at this stage of life, Lord, continue to make a difference through them, I pray, in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. Amen.